And it is sports talk. That means it's time to get our view from the north. Mixing it up a bit. On Twitter, use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress, covering the Ducks and Seahawks for the Oregonian. Mr. Fentress, how's Team Fentress doing this week?
You switched it up on me, huh?
Yeah, remember, because the conversation on Twitter yesterday was centered on Off the Wall. I figured, for a one-time deal, let's mix and match.
I like it, I like it. I'm doing great. How about you?
All is well. I was thinking, so when Thriller came out in 83, you were pretty young. Off the Wall, 79. I mean, was Fentress in elementary school or close?
Fentress was... sixth or seventh.
All right, so I'm close. I'm in the neighborhood. I got you.
I spent my first allowance. I got $5, and I immediately made my dad take me to the store to buy Thriller, buy Off the Wall, and it was $7.99. So I asked for an advance on my next week's allowance. And my dad was like, okay, are you sure now? Are you sure it's what you want? I looked at him like he was crazy. I was like, have you not met me before? You know I like the Jacksons. Why would I not want Off the Wall? Crazy fool, give me the album.
All right.
I wore that thing out, dude. It was bad.
Yeah, that was when I was in college. And like I said earlier, being of my age and being a huge Jackson 5 fan, and it's like when that came out, we were like, all right, so it was Michael, and the rest of them were like the coattails. It was like, this guy's next level, all right? That was like the proof in our pudding. So there you
exactly.
go. All right, so let's start with the Seahawks. They've been named prominently as perhaps in the running to sign Antonio Brown. And, of course, at 32, I mean, when he was right, who's kidding who? He's a terror. Does that make sense to you, or maybe under certain circumstances? What's your read on this?
Oh, man. It's, you know, when he was a free agent after he first went out of Pittsburgh, I remember writing something saying that it just would not be a good idea to sign him because, you know, he's just a weird dude and just very selfish, and it just didn't seem like it would be a good fit. And it was clear that Carroll was trying to get rid of guys who were sort of, you know, going against him. Like Richard Sherman was already gone, and Earl Thomas had 1 year left and wanted an extension, and clearly they were going to ride that out and then let him walk, and then Lynch was gone. So it just didn't make any sense to me. But now the circumstances are different because in that scenario in the past, it would have been like a contract, like you signed with the Raiders, which guaranteed money, right? I would never give that guy a bunch of guaranteed money. But if I can sign him for like on the cheap, if he passes some kind of psychological evaluation, if he swears up and down he's going to fly straight, if Russell Wilson signs off on it, Russell Wilson worked out with the guy in the offseason, so clearly there's some type of relationship there. Then I see no harm at all in bringing him in on a non-guaranteed deal. And if he acts a fool, you get rid of him. And if he flies straight, you got Lockett, him, and Metcalf. That's your three receivers. You're going to be pretty deadly. So, yeah, I would, like I said, if he checks out, I would roll the dice.
All righty. I'll make a note of that. this weekend, man, I don't know how many people early in the season said you're not going to want to miss Seahawks-Cardinals, but now it's the Sunday nighter, the only unbeaten NFC team, a 4-2 divisional game. I know it's early, but man, nice to have a lot on the line, and this is a big game.
Yeah, thank God for the Cardinals, since the Rams are struggling and the 49ers are a mess, although I think the 49ers will come back when it matters most. It's a big game. I think the Cardinals are still a year away. Clearly, they're playing well, but I feel like Seattle handles this game. Not easily, I should say, because Seattle's defense is pretty mediocre. We all know that. But I just feel like, you know, that Wilson in the passing game is so good that they're going to be able to get it done and win it. But, yeah, it's fascinating just to see the Cardinals are back in this thing and to see how they're doing it. They're just spreading out. They're basically running a college-style offense with a kid they took, you know, first overall, who's a unique talent at quarterback with his escapability, and still has that big arm. So, yeah, it should be a fun game to watch.
Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. Get to his Bears. It's funny because so much attention on the quarterback. It's like they are the sneakiest 5-1 team ever. They're like Seattle. You know, every game's a cardiac special.
But, juggernaut. What are you talking about? They're just toying with people. you know how a grizzly bear toys with his food for a while before he eats it? That's all they're doing.
So this is the Ali version of the rope-a-dope NFL style.
Exactly. We want to keep the point spreads low, that's all.
So the thing is, only Atlanta even rung up more than 400 yards on him. I mean, the bottom line is, with a defense like that, you know, you don't need the Chiefs' offense. They've got a shot in their games.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'll be honest. They're 5-1, but it's a very precarious 5-1. It's more like a, how the hell are we 5-1? 5-1, not a true 5-1. So I think, you know, most Bears fans probably believe that a 3-game losing streak is on the horizon at some point, which is why you're glad you're 5-1, because you can absorb that and still be in the playoff hunt. But the hope is that Nick Foles can get better, like that maybe that, you know, he'll, after playing a few games and moving along with the system and the players he's playing with, that he'll find some kind of magic and become legit, because right now, the way they are offensively, you know, losses are on the horizon. it's just going to happen. The defense has been carrying things.
So tonight's game, Giants-Philly, two wins between them. Is there anything that'll keep you from watching this game?
There's no World Series game tonight either, huh?
No.
There's a debate, though. I might check that out instead. I have no reason whatsoever why I would be entertained watching this game tonight. I don't even think I have any fantasy players in this game. I picked up I had Dak Prescott in one of my leagues. He goes down. I picked up Dalton. I rolled the dice with him because Dalton looked so good in relief of Dak the prior week, and I activated Dalton. That did not go well. So I have zero reason to watch the game. I think I'm going to just maybe check in, just because someone's got to win that division, right? So this is actually a big game, really.
That's the scary part about it. The winner pulls into a virtual tie with Dallas with a second win.
Yeah.
Oh, no, last...
I was thinking Dallas played tonight. It's Giants-Eagles, my bad.
Right.
I'm talking about Dalton, yeah. I don't have any Giants or Eagles, so yeah, I have no reason to watch this game.
Now, my kids got me my Danny Dimes t-shirt. I got it out for tonight.
nice.
Moving to Oregon as we continue with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. You wrote about the quarterback, and as we speak, the gig is Tyler Shucks. You love to go into the film room, and we know he's been limited in actual game action. So from what you've seen, what strikes you about his run in this offense?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the more interesting things that comes about with college football, obviously, is the changeover at quarterback. Who's going to be the next quarterback? Who's going to be the guy? And Oregon's done a great job in, obviously, you know, dating back for a long time now. They went from, I mean, with a few hiccups here and there, they went from Harrington to Clemens, basically, although Fife was in there, to Dennis, although he had some struggles, to Masoli, although there was some controversy there, to Darren Thomas, you know, to Mariota, and then Vernon Adams, and then Kupp for a minute, and then Herbert. I mean, that's a great run of QBs, I mean, how you shake it. But each time along the way, there's been some competitions here and there that have helped shape great starters. I'm actually going to post something later tonight on sort of the best QB competitions of the last 35 years.
Nice.
And so now we're in a situation now where, okay, we've had the same starter. Oregon's had the same starter for basically 4 years, and now there's this new guy that we've seen very little of in terms of, you know, game action. He's thrown, I think, 15 passes, but he's completed 12. So, you know, it's tough to go in and say, what's this guy going to be? Because he's not been asked to do a lot of difficult things. Like, he's not throwing deep dips, he's not throwing goes, he's not throwing wheel routes or comebacks, post corners, things like that in the games he's played. He's completed mostly slants, hitches, quick outs, things like that. But, you know, there's little things you can look for that can sort of tell you that this guy has the goods. Now, I'll make a Jeff Lockie analogy here, or not analogy, but just a story. When Jeff Lockie went 9 for 9 in that scrimmage, or that spring game a few years ago, remember that? 9 for 9 for 1, yeah, or whatever it was, a couple touchdowns. I remember writing about, like, that was, like, the most unimpressive 9 for 9 performance I've ever seen in my life, because he hadn't done anything. He looked like he was not ready to play quarterback at all at that level, even though he was 9 for 9. Whereas Shuck, on the other hand, when you watch him in the spring games, even though he's been up and down, he looks like a dude.
Yeah.
he's big, he's athletic, he can move. He's not, you know, he's not Mariota as a runner, but I think he can be around as good as Herbert or Darren Thomas. And he got a strong arm. And the thing I noticed most in terms of watching the gameplay, mostly against Nevada, is that, you know, even, you know, he's not throwing complicated passes, but there's several times, if you can go to Oregon Live and see my film review on him, there's several times where he stood in the pocket against with bad protection, which is a red flag, by the way. I just want everyone to understand this. You know, we got a new offensive line for Oregon this year, and against Nevada, these backups did not look very good because there were several times where Nevada players were right in Shuck's face, but he stands in there and delivers strikes while getting hit. And so, for me, when I see a young quarterback who does that, that tells me this guy's got heart. He's got moxie. He knows where he's supposed to go with the football. There's one play where he's got a slant and there's a defender underneath and hooked a curl. If he throws it on time, it's going to get picked. But he waits an extra tick, lets him clear that safety and find the next window, and then delivers it as he's getting hit. I mean, that stuff, that's innate. Like, he gets it. And there's another play where, you know, there's nothing, everyone's covered, and he just tucks it and runs, and then jukes a couple DBs in the secondary. Like, two things like that, that should get you excited. So, Ducks fans who are wondering what Tyler Shuck could bring, go check this out. It just gives you a little breakdown of his potential. And so my conclusion is, I'm not going to say he's going to be great. I got to see him in a game and see him really throw, you know, some of the complicated passes. But at the very least, I think he is going to be good. Like, he's going to be solid to good at the that's his floor, and then we'll see if he can elevate himself into in the next great Oregon quarterback.
So Aaron Fentress gives the Tyler Shuck film a 94 on Rotten Tomatoes. I saw you on a podcast talking about the greatest Duck teams of all time, and when that surfaces, I'm like, all right, I want to set the parameters. Is it the most accomplished, like 2014? Is it the perfect regular season, like 2010? Or do you go 2012, where in essence, aside from Stanford, you just kill everybody? What did you come up with?
Look, man, I will argue this to the death, and I don't understand how it's even a debate. It's 2014. Now, in a show I did for NBC with Blotti, Harrington, Newman, and Pelham, and Campbell, we talked about this, and Blotti's argument was how you finish matters. And so his argument was 2001 was greater than 2014 because 2001 ended with a win in the Fiesta Bowl, whereas 2015 and 2010 ended with losses in the national title game. To me, that's ridiculous because, to me, losing the national title game is more impressive than winning a bowl game, no matter how good of a bowl game it was. Even though we all believe that Oregon should have been probably in the national title game against Miami that year, but they would have gotten smoked. And that's the thing I said, too. They would have gotten smoked by Miami, so therefore, it would have been the equal of what happened to in the Auburn game and the Ohio State game. So to me, I think I poo-pooed that, and I disagree with Blotti in the time for that one. But the 2012 thing is funny to me, because people would bring that up a lot, 2012. But how could 2012 be better than 2014 when Mariota was better in 2014 than he was in 2012? And DeForest Buckner and Armstead, two of the best D linemen to ever come out of Oregon, were dominant players in 14, whereas they barely played in 2012. There's no way that D line was better in 2012 than that D line in 2014. Plus, in 2014, you got Ifo and Troy Hill, who were starting as early as 2011, 2012. So your secondary was better because of the experience they had. Like, to me, it's just a ridiculous argument. I just don't even. And plus, you had Royce Freeman and Tyner and Byron Marshall. I mean, it was very much a receiver that year, but in the receiver core that year, oh my God, those guys went off.